I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Icky Mac is back in the passenger seat, right?
No.
So today's sermon from A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Holleran. Today's chapter that we're going to be looking at is called Loving Your Enemies.
Goodness.
I've heard you had a week.
Wow.
Have you been able to practice this chapter so far? Before we bring the audience in, I just want to reintroduce you to those of us whose first time it is listening to the show. And you are a very loving, growing individual that also has a DJ here on KMRD on Friday nights, 9 to midnight. You are a turntablist?
A turntablist. Yeah, I just want to say thank you for having me here. Because I didn't realize that there was anything before noon on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's why I have church on Saturday, because Sunday mornings don't exist for me anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
I just sleep straight through the thing.
Straight through it.
But I'm glad that you're here. And we're going to set up the chapter with my historical book report. But I wanted to just give you a chance to bring in any points, or if you want to finish your coffee while I...
No, we're good. We're good. Let's dive right in.
Let's dive right in. All right, we're going to dive right in. Well, folks, as you know, we've been doing the In the Cab Book Club. And this is the second book in our series. The first one was all about love, new visions from Bell Hooks. And I know now why A Knock at Midnight came up as the second choice, because within this sermon today alone is so much material that I can see that Bell Hooks drew from for All About Love. And it is just truly amazing. She did a trilogy that's called Love Song to the Nation. And so if you can just put all of these things together in your mind. We were just discussing that All About Love came out in 1999, and these sermons from Dr. King were being delivered starting in the 1950s, and so about 40 years had gone by before Bell Hooks really felt like we need to bring this back. And now here we are today, talking about the same concepts 25 years after Bell Hooks released All About Love. And it's getting shorter. Time isn't real, but if we do look at it in a linear fashion, it looks like these concepts are popping forward in a tighter rotation, right?
A tighter arc, right?
A tighter arc. Thank you.
You think the waveform, you know, it's shrinking and getting closer together.
So I'm going to tell you about what I learned around this sermon. The introduction to this one in the book is written by Reverend Joan Brown Campbell. She worked with Dr. King. And she tells a story in her very brief introduction about how her granddaughter was shocked that Reverend Campbell knew Dr. King personally as, quote, he's in history. And this resonated with me specifically because I often wonder how interested people are in our shared history and listening to me talk about history and listening to me play old school songs. And I believe that it is important to understand where we have come from so that we may move through these difficult times into a future where we may all live without fear or oppression, violence, and cruelty. Our stories are compelling and meaningful, and we must guard our history so that we may see our growth and gauge our potential. There are people out here, politicians with interests in maintaining supremacy, abusive capitalistic mindset, and imperialism that are murdering people in astronomical numbers. And it's been happening for hundreds of years, if not thousands. And I still contend that it is our nature to want to break the cycle of oppression. There are more members of the cult of peace than in the cult of violence. What are your feelings on that?
That's absolutely right. You can look around and see that everywhere. You know, we don't have protests. I'm sorry. We don't have protests saying, hey, end the peace now. You know, we do have, of course, the military flags and all that thing. And, you know, the marching of the military down the streets periodically, usually relegated to one military day. Right. But we actually have a lot of people worldwide standing up saying no more.
Yep.
Not in our name. Not with our money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all we want, right? We want a government that responds to us, but it's getting very clear that that's not the case, I think. I think the work here, Knock at Midnight, this next chapter that we're about to review, is actually directly speaking into that. You know, I mean, we've seen the nonviolent movements. I mean, Martin Luther King showed us. Mahatma Gandhi showed us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen it around. And these things actually do work. They can change, you know, it's about being steadfast. So I think that this is the food for the peaceful belly, you know, this is the instructions for how we're going to maintain. It's difficult. It's hard. And we need everybody.
Yes. It's really fun. I like how you said instructions, because Dr. King, he lines it out. He numbers things and bullet points. The first thing we need to do, the second thing we need to do, the third thing. And then I'm going to talk about theoretical hows and practical whys, or vice versa. I mean, he really does lay it out. He's like, here's some things we can do. And also the food. I like how you said that. For me, it's so nourishing to hear and see other people who are really invested in doing things differently, because sometimes I feel like silly.
Yeah. Overwhelmed.
Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. Right.
You know, especially doing the work of educating myself and staying abreast in current events. And I will tell you, if you don't know, the things that are happening at our borders, beyond our borders of this country, a lot of them are due to the behaviors of our government as an imperialist power.
That's right.
So it's none of this. Those people need to go back where they came from and fix their own country. Like, we need to help them fix the mess that we made. It is our responsibility. It's like a parent, abusive parent, United States.
We are the example that these underdeveloped countries, quote unquote, are grown up, you know, looking at. You know, just like our parents, right? Just like, you know, we learn so much from them. I mean, we go in and force our way into so many different places and then show them this and show them, you know, obedience through oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? They turn around and go with the same thing. They get the, you know, the gang leaders up into their offices because that's what they see.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see, you know, a Trump or a Biden in office. They see gang leaders.
And there, that is the definite thing about the youth. When youth are recruited, it's take the youth and corrupt them by the image of the rich drug lord. I will also say, a lot of people are not given a choice. So it's worse than being from the streets in America. I think being from the streets of Haiti or Jamaica or even in a village in Congo at this point, because you are literally taken out by militants put in by governments and into forced labor or death.
Right. Because what does it come down to? Why do these things happen?
The minerals in the ground.
Minerals, the profits of corporations. Corporations that, you know, we as Americans have built up and put stock into and buy all the products of.
Well, you need a new phone.
Yeah.
You really need a new phone.
No, actually. Really.
No, it's still working. I see it lighting up.
It's an Apple 4.
Oh, word. Good for you. Making the 4 stretch.
It's a long
nice.
One.
Nice.
I'm kidding. It's a 6.
Oh. Don't lie. I've got a 7. But what are they now on, like 12 or
14? But I don't know exactly.
So we're doing pretty good. I'm waiting for this thing to conk out anytime for them to let me make me get another one. But there are all these companies that have refurbished products.
Right.
Like, folks, you don't have to buy it brand new. You don't have to lease it brand new. Like, and then it goes in the junk pile.
Reuse? Reduce, recycle. Thank you, Bob the Builder. I mean, that's absolutely right, though. And that's how we beat capitalism. And that's why that's a big thing about capitalism. They don't want you to reuse or reduce your usage. They want you to throw that thing away and get a new one because that's, what do they call it? Like unlimited growth potential.
That's right. That's right.
And what's that doing? It's destroying our earth and it's enslaving people all around the world. And we got to stop it.
We got to stop it.
We have to.
Yes. All right. Now all right. that we've established what the mission is, I'm going to talk about
that's the baseline.
That's the baseline.
We can go up from there.
stop all exploitation, and that's just where we start.
Wait, can I tell you one little quick story about this? So one of my dear friends, they bought some Girl Scout cookies. You might have seen them in town and all that. And I was
do you have any?
No.
Sorry.
And I was like, I don't know. I can't do this. And they're like, I'll just have one. I was like, okay, I'll have one. And then, it's delicious. I want every bit of it.
What was it?
I always forget the name because I don't want to love them.
What was it like?
Kind of coconutty with that. Like a macaroon.
Yeah.
Something like that. But, with all that chocolate and caramel and all that. Oh, it's delicious, right? So I'm eating this. It's in my mouth and I'm eating it. And they tell me, there's a controversy because of palm oil. Now, palm oil is bad. Right? We all know this, And of course, that's environmentally devastating and problems there, but there's actually a deeper issue. And so they were telling me that the Girl Scouts went and they were trying to refuse serving, the cookies and all that until they, found a different source or a better source and all that. And the main company hit back and said, well, we can't do that, but we can tell you with absolute certainty or whatever the word is, absolute assuredness that, the palm oil comes 95% slave free.
Oof.
5% is too much.
Oof.
You're telling me, how do you justify that Girl Scout cookies?
How do you even put that on a label?
No, they didn't.
I mean, no, but I mean, just the way you said it, though, is like, this is 95% slave free.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Eesh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. And so, here I am just spitting out chunks of cookie and resolved. I'm never putting that in my body again. We are what we eat, and I'm not saying whatever, but if we condone these, it's just a cookie, it'll be okay. That just a cookie is enslaving someone. And if we're eating that, we're taking that in, and we're just a slave to the system too.
No. Gosh.
Sorry.
So no. This is why we're here, is to shed light, and it's really horrifying, but we're not going to really go into it right now because there's so much to cover,
and
we've got to give it over to DJ Barnacle here in just about 40 minutes. So I wanted to jump into the context and my own introduction of this sermon, and this is going to be a little lengthy, Iggy Mac. So I'm going to just mute your mic for a bit. This sermon, Loving Your Enemies, was delivered by the Reverend Doctor on November 17th, 1957. And some of the major events regarding the United States Black Civil Rights Movement leading up to this sermon, and I mean in that year, I'm going to list a few things that happened. Dwight D. Eisenhower and Richard Nixon were inaugurated for a second term on January 20th. Okay, so there's that there. On January 23rd, the Ku Klux Klan members force a truck driver, Willie Edwards, to jump off a bridge into the Alabama River. He drowns as a result. That's on January 23rd, 1957. On August 28th, the United States Senator Strom Thurmond, famous, sets the record for the longest filibuster with his 24-hour, 18-minute speech railing against civil rights. 24 hours and 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Can you imagine talking that long? I know we've had some long shows here, but good gosh.
I could talk that long.
You are devoted to something.
Yeah.
And he read all of these weird things. He read court cases and documents. He even read George Washington's farewell speech. What? He was just pulling out all kinds of stuff to keep the filibuster going.
Because they have nothing to say. They're reading children's books or whatever to get past the time. I mean, we've seen that recently.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's a joke.
Let's see. And then after that, on September 4th, the American Civil Rights Movement, Governor Orville Faubus of Arkansas, calls out the National Guard of the United States to prevent the Little Rock Nine. Those are the African-American students who were trying to enroll in Little Rock Central High School. Okay? The governor of Arkansas called out the National Guard to prevent children from registering for school. Now, this is 3 years after the Brown versus the Board of Education decision was made by the Supreme Court to desegregate schools. Mm-hmm. It was 3 years after that, and Southern schools and leaders and citizens were so opposed to this because the government didn't put parameters around when the integration needed to happen. They just weren't doing it. And it was actually 13 years before things were fully desegregated in the South into 1965. So that's sort of, that's the theme around this speech. And I want to touch on a letter that Reverend King wrote along with members of the Southern Negro Leaders Conference, which later became the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC, which did a lot of nonviolent direct actions throughout the civil rights movement, and they are still around today doing work. They got together and wrote a letter to Eisenhower asking him to do something. And they were saying there was also in the works already a march planned or being considered for May 17th of that year to commemorate the Brown versus the Board of Education decision. Mm-hmm. And in this letter to Eisenhower, Dr. King was like, please do something. And if you don't come to the South and give a speech, we're going to bring the South to you.
Yeah.
To Washington.
Awesome.
I know. So I just want to read some of this letter, because it does a better job of painting the picture of the violence that was occurring in the South than I could ever do. And he lays it all out. And this is why loving your enemies, I want to set it up, because it's not just, oh, this is just a preacher talking some Jesus and we should love our enemies, but they don't know how tough it is. They know how tough it is. Mm-hmm. They were bombed.
Yes.
There's lynchings, okay? And nobody wanted to do anything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a little bit. Dear Mr. President, permit us to acknowledge the receipt of the White House communications of January 18th, 1957, stating your inability to schedule an address in the South to encourage the maintenance of law and order as requested by the Southern Negro Leaders Conference on January 11th, 1957. We pointed out in our letter to you that lawlessness was becoming a deeply disturbing feature of the daily life of our communities. Violence has continued to erupt by night and day. It has grown to alarming proportions. Some of the acts of violence would be unbelievable were the grim ruins not mute testimony. Under the cover of darkness, dynamite bombs have been exploded in our churches and the homes of our ministers and citizens. We have been compelled to post unarmed guards nightly to protect our church property. We are no longer faced with sporadic violence, but with what appears to be an organized campaign of violence and terror. Against this shocking background, we have met in New Orleans to consider your response to our request. While we are sensitive to the burden of your responsible office, we are aware that human life and orderly, decent conduct of our communities are at stake. These imperative considerations make it difficult for us to accept as final your message that you cannot make a speech in the South at this time. It is our sincere belief that action on your part at this moment can avert tragic situations by cooling passions, fostering reasonableness, and encouraging respect for law. In saying this, we are not unmindful of the immense responsibility of your office in the conduct of our national and international affairs. However, morality, like charity, begins at home. Here at home, as we write, we are confronted with a breakdown of law, order, and morality. This condition is a sinister challenge and a threat to government by law. It calls for drastic and remedial action. The flouting of the Supreme Court decisions serves not only to deprive a part of our citizenry of its rightful privileges, but even more, it weakens the fabric of our democratic society for all people, Negro and white. The unleashing of violence against individuals who peacefully pursue justice, against clergymen, and against the house of God are unspeakable crimes. They arouse the conscience of all honorable Americans to compel an end to those outrages as proof of their devotion to democratic and spiritual ideals. To this end, we implore you to re-examine your decision not to speak out to the South on the question of law and order. Number two, we further urge you to call a White House conference on the maintenance of law and order similar to those held earlier on education and juvenile delinquency. We believe such a conference can help develop in the South and in the nation an orderly growth towards civil rights. We ask you to do these things because our people, though resolute and courageous, cannot be expected forever to be targets for rifles, shotguns, and for bombs, particularly when our women and children are brought within range of those deadly weapons. We know that if a halt is put to these terrorist practices, our appeals for nonviolent Christian behavior will come into serious question by those whose frustration has already been difficult to contain. We believe your inability to come South is a profound disappointment to the millions of Americans, North and South, who earnestly are looking to you for leadership and guidance in this period of inevitable social change. Mr. President, we urge you to give democratic leadership to the confused citizens of the South and the nation in this critical hour. We implore you to enunciate, whether in the North or South, an Eisenhower doctrine for democracy at home. In the absence of some early and effective remedial action, we shall have no moral choice but to lead a pilgrimage of prayer to Washington. If you, our president, cannot come South to relieve our harassed people, we shall have to lead our people to you in the Capitol in order to call the nation's attention to the violence and organized terror directed toward men, women, and children who merely seek freedom and first-class citizenship of goodwill from across the nation will undoubtedly join in such a pilgrimage for freedom and human dignity. Mr. President, we prayerfully urge you to give early and serious consideration to the two requests we have made in this letter for the violence of our people face by day and in the dark of each night makes it imperative that we hear from you at your earliest convenience. Please reply to the Reverend Martin Luther King, 530C, South Union, Montgomery, Alabama. I like that. So polite.
So polite. It's outrageous.
And lacking any action from the Eisenhower administration, Dr. King and others went forward and petitioned activists and leaders everywhere to join the prayer pilgrimage. It was organized by Bayard Rustin, Ella Baker, and Stanley Levison, and it brought together many prominent civil rights supporters, and it drew about 20,000 people, and they had speeches and music and testimony from Southern activists, and the event closed with King's famous Give Us the Ballot address. And I'll just really just say that I had a couple of excerpts from that, but I'm going to move on. But if you can look up the Give Us the Ballot speech, it's really, really powerful. And one of them is, give us the ballot and we will no longer have to worry the federal government about our basic rights. Give us the ballot and we will no longer plead to the federal government for passage of an anti-lynching law. We will, by the power of our vote, write the law mm-hmm. on the statute books of the South and bring an end to the dastardly acts of the hooded perpetrators of violence. And, you know, within the desegregation conversation is the voting rights.
Right.
Because black people were faced violence and laws prohibiting, even though we had the right to vote, black men had the right to vote since the mid-1800s, mid to late, they weren't allowed to get to the polls or vote because of various laws that mm-hmm. That governments had in place in southern states. And we still face this today.
Mm-hmm.
We still face
voter disenfranchisement.
Yes, voter disenfranchisement.
Keeping poor and underprivileged people from the polls, doing everything they can to move districts so it's far, far away.
Mm-hmm.
Requiring the driver's license. If you don't know, if you have any trouble getting your ID, that's a pain in the rear to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most difficult things to pick up on. You're having to have bills to prove, you know, this and that. And it's like, not everybody has everything in their name.
That's right.
Some people living in houses with like 5, 6, 7 more people, and not everybody's got a bill in their name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very tricky system that they put up there because they think they're so smart.
But there are organizations, thankfully, that are doing the work, and it's a marathon.
Yeah. You know, however the controversy, I'm not really sure exactly what it is, but this is a joke, but a pretty good point from Michael Che, right? He said, we're just fighting for civil rights. We're not even going for equal rights. Can we just have civil rights? And it's like, if you look at it today, like, look at the uncivility in our voting structure.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the rampant fervor for things that are just like absolutely opposed to other human beings. No, we still don't have civil rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, not even close to equal rights yet. We're working. We're trying.
We're working. We're trying. We're reading. We're learning. We're growing.
Right. So here we are in Loving Your Enemies.
Here we are loving your enemies when the segment's almost over.
Yeah.
But that's good because y'all need to go get this book from your library, or the audiobook is out there too. You can just put it in and see what you find in the search engine.
Yeah, we really need your thoughts on this. You know, it's great to hear ours, and that's cool for the discussion, but we need everybody's thoughts on this.
Give them your Icky Mac at Instagram.
Icky Mac at Instagram, spelled exactly like it sounds.
Well, we need you to think. I mean, I don't need everybody running everything past me because we're not going to agree on everything. But, you know, the baseline that I hope we can agree on is that we all have the right to do our thing, to exist and to live.
We need your perspective.
Together.
Because, you know, we all think differently and we can all come together as long as we work it out. Let's think.
So in this sermon, Dr. King has some bullet points that can help guide us in what he calls the practical hows and the theoretical whys to practice nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that I want to just touch on quickly, the way, how do you love your enemies, right? How do you love your enemy, Iggy Mac? Do you?
I mean, like, that's a really intense question.
And actually, let's just start by doing like the bell hooks, you know, because he defines love in here, in this sermon as well. He goes through the three different words that that mm-hmm. Greeks had for love: eros, philia, and agape.
Mm-hmm.
And the love that Dr. King is talking about is the agape, the love for your fellow human being, because that's the way of the universe.
And that they're right in is the answer you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the hardest one for us all to see, but it's our fellow human being. You know, we are actually equal. We are human beings. There's no above any other human or below any other human. And that is kind of like that, you know, word namaste, you know, recognizing where we dwell within each other's hearts. Yes. I mean, that's a paraphrase, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's more than just empathy. Now, you may not like someone. I do appreciate King pointing that out. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like them,
mm-mm.
but you got to love them.
Yes, and he touches on that in this speech. Is he says that's a good reason that a good thing that Jesus didn't say like,
mm-hmm.
because I can't like the people who mm-mm. seek to oppress me.
That's right.
But I can love them. And excuse me. So in this, he says agape is something of the understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill for all men. It's a love that seeks nothing in return. It is what theologians would call the love of God working in the lives of men.
Yeah.
So how do you love your enemies? Well, the first thing that he suggests is why we started with All About Love. We have to look at ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. King puts that right out here. And I'm sure it sounds strange to you that I start out telling you this morning that to love your enemies by beginning with a look at yourself. And there are several reasons for that. The main one that comes down to it is he points that there could be something that you did do. Something that you said or did that you might not remember that may be deep in your consciousness, but that other person carries. But the main one that I think is very important to our conversation right now is imperialism. He addresses democracy as the greatest form of government, yet America doesn't practice democracy.
That's right. That's right.
Say some stuff because I'm talking way long. I'm looking at page 44.
I do have something I'd like to say. Along that, you know, is loving our enemies. Like this book really helped point this out. You know, I have an adversarial person in my life right now, a few. And you know, it's made me rethink other things I've learned and this and that, of course. But, you know, I'm just going to start with this quote from Dr. Joan Brown mm-hmm. Campbell, who's actually quoting King. She just takes two different parts. But
this is in the introduction.
Right. Page 38, if you're reading along. Harsh treatment is not the way to deal with those who are dangerous. Violence only begets more violence. And then goes on to quote, the strong person is the person who can cut off the chain of hate, the chain of evil. Now, skipping ahead, though, to page 51, right to the sermon, you know, King says, there's another reason why you should love your enemies, and that is because hate distorts the personality of the hater.
Right.
Paraphrasing even further, it is even more ruinous and injurious to the individual who hates. So I would argue right now that loving your enemies is actually another form of ultimate self-love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times have you seen not that we have any of them here in town, but those super grumpy people who just like hold on to their hate,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just get more vile and their words just get more extreme and their attitudes get worse and worse and worse. And they're really hard to be around. Right. And that really is hate. And like a whole physiological like aspect of hate, you can see it, you know, show up in our livers. And as those start to go, it only increases, you know, the pain and the anger that we have towards others and ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, you know, in addition, you know, loving your enemies is also self-love.
Yes, that comes into the theoretical whys, that portion of it where he lists why we should be doing this. Right. Is to care for ourselves, number one, if no one else. We can just start there. I love myself too much to let somebody bring me into that dark place.
Yeah.
I've been at the edge of that void for sure. So as we look at democracy and the imperialist actions of Western Northern Hemispheric countries that what we're enacting across the world right now, we need to look at that specifically. I'm imploring our citizens of the United States is before you start coming out of your mouth, blaming everybody else for why you don't have, blaming those brown people who are really literally drowning to try to swim here because what we did in their country is so painful that they can't exist there. Take a look at yourself. Take a look at what the ideals that you support from your government so that you can have a comfortable life with excess and what we take from others without paying them without letting them elect their own officials. What's going on in Haiti right now is hundreds of years of usurp in this tense that I want. Like, they've taken the governments of this country and assassinated all of the elected leaders and put in plants.
Yeah.
And then we say, well, those people can't do, those people aren't smart, those people aren't worthy. And it's because of the U.S. interest in that country that we commit. Help me, you know these words. The conspiracy, the quote unquote, what are no longer conspiracy theories, but that the CIA, neither one of us got enough sleep last night. But when we commit coup d'etats in other countries for our own interest, we have to look at that, because that's what's creating a lot of the disruption in what we call the third world. The third world is actually the richest. They have the most resources generally, or strategic placements and military and trade routes.
Right. But often it is the resources.
Right.
And that's, you know, they don't become the first world because we keep them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we keep them down to exploit that.
Through the military, through military force.
Right. And that's modern day colonialism.
Mm-hmm. So Martin Luther King, his second how is every time you feel yourself wanting to hate somebody, to find the good thing in them. Now, this is really hard. We got election coming up, y'all. And that's another reason why I'm getting warmed up on all this. We're getting warmed up because these conversations, especially conversations around free speech, free TikTok, free speech is huge in our country right now. And if you don't know it, it's huge, even if you don't know it. And it's going to get worse as the new governments take hold here.
Yeah,
because we're in our own coup. The corporations have really pretty much taken over our government.
That's right.
So let's look at how do we, Iggy Mac, how do I see something good in someone like, can we say his, can, like these politicians who lead us, okay, how about that? The ones who don't seem to be dying from cancer from being so hateful. They have all the medical care, all the money, and they just won't die. It's like the opposite.
Right.
Mitch McConnell will not die. So how do I see something good in him? I mean, is a good grandpa? Like, what am I looking for here?
Right. Well, you know, I would say, like, a lot of times when I have to exercise this is I'm looking at what motivates them. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with, you know, what motivates them, but I can look with compassion and see, well, this is a greed. This is, you know, wanting to make their family better. You know, they want to make sure that their life is stacked and that their people are good. You know, I mean, these are things that I too want. I want my friends and, you know, direct family to live the best lives possible, right? So it's very basic and it's very low, but I always start somewhere there when I'm looking at, like, my enemy, you know, or, I mean, yeah, Mitch McConnell and I, we're not trying Jesus. We're going straight to hands if I see him. No, of course not.
Of course not, because you'll go to jail and we can't have that.
No. But that's what I mean, is that, like, I always start with the lowest common denominator when I'm looking at, you know, someone I perceive as my enemy is, well, they're having a hard time. They're just trying to get by. They're just trying to, you know, pay their bills. They're just trying to feed their family. They're just trying to make sure their friends are good. Wouldn't I want all these things? You know, I start there and then I work my way. Well, how do we all become one giant family? How does everybody become my friend? We're working on that one still.
Hmm. King says on page 46, this idea that within the best of us, there is some evil. And within the worst of us, there is some good.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of grace that I ask people to give me, and I try to give others, but it's easier to want it for myself than it is to give it out.
Right.
We have to check ourselves. Another way you can love your enemy is mercy, which he brings in on the bottom. He doesn't exactly say mercy, but he says that when the opportunity presents itself to defeat your enemy, that you don't. And I think by defeat, he's talking about don't humiliate this person. If this person comes to you at the end of the day and asks for something, that you show mercy to them. And then that leads into the redemptive love that bell hooks expounds on in a chapter in All About Love, and that you were talking about earlier. That's that real love has the capacity to transform.
Right. Right. And then giving people the grace to transform. If we hold anger or resentment towards our enemies and they finally want to come clean and correct, you know, if we're still holding that anger and resentment, you know, that's not a problem with the person trying to fix it. That's a problem within ourselves. Mm-hmm. That means that we're still holding on to hate.
And sometimes they don't even apologize.
That's right.
You know, but you see a person who has been humbled, even if they're still not at the point where they can admit that they're humble.
Yeah.
It's like the look of a browbeatenness or a kick dog or something, where a person is like, I just talked all of this mess about you, and now I need you to fix my water, and I'm not really ready to say sorry, and I can't look you in the eye. Well, what you supposed to say? You don't get no water. Don't ask me. Ask somebody else.
That's right.
Then that underlines that person's, I know that he was a jerk. That's why I said all this stuff about him. And now I'm filled with more upset because he did me wrong on top of everything. And Right. Now I can't have water too. You know, like when you kick somebody when they're down, even if they did you wrong, it's not right.
And, you know, that's another part of it too, is like, you know, we also shouldn't really expect apologies. You know, I mean, we can see change in people, and that can be great, and that can be apology enough, because there's this aspect of apologies that's very akin to supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not always, not in all situations, especially when it's heartfelt, but sometimes like just demanding an apology is like, you're below me.
Yeah.
And no one is below anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as King says on page 49, for the few moments left, let us move to the practical how. From the practical how to the theoretical why. It's a couple here. The first reason is that hate for hate only intensifies the existence of hate in the universe.
That's right.
And we've talked about that in weeks leading up to this, that it's a cycle. Mm-hmm. They call it the cycle of violence.
Yeah.
And another reason is the distortion of the personality.
Sorry.
Health reasons. No, that's great. Thank you for bringing it up. Because he talks really a lot about how we are not even thinking straight.
Yeah.
You know, you're not functioning correctly when you're in a mindset of hate and overwhelm and anxiety.
Or pain.
Yes.
Which, of course, that's what hate leads to. Yes. Physical pain within yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to think clearly when you're in pain. And Lord, I know that one.
And the last reason is the redemptive power, which he talks about on page 53. We have just a few more minutes here. I wanted to skip to page 56. And he talks about at the top of the page how the country and the whole world is facing a revolution, which, again, is true for right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen so many activists from across the globe that are standing up to imperialism, and they're calling it out.
Yeah, no, I know pacifists and people who don't get involved who are so frustrated that they're calling it out and standing up and speaking out.
That's right. And he actually says in the bottom of page 56, non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good.
Just repeat that.
Non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good.
Yeah.
And that's civil disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
That is specifically civil disobedience. He says, history unfortunately leaves some people oppressed and some people oppressors. And there are three ways that individuals who are oppressed can deal with their oppression. One of them is to rise up and say no. And he addresses the armed resistance there. The second way is to give in. And he says, no, we won't give in. And that's the quote we directly just made. And the third way is to organize mass nonviolent resistance based on the principle of love. And that's on page 57 of A Knock at Midnight, Inspirations from the Great Sermons of Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Doctor. Martin Luther King Jr. Iggy Mac, I'm going to let you have the last couple of words.
Oh, thank you. You know, I recently we came across the anniversary for Bloody Sunday. Just look it up, yes. Bloody Sunday.
Yes.
One thing I really want to talk about with that is that, you know, I think we're so desensitized to TV, you know, by TV and by movies and all that, that we don't really realize the impact that's going on here. You know, those water cannons, I don't know if you've ever been hit with anything over 30 PSI, but 100 PSI hurts. It hurts bad. It feels like you're getting hit with bricks and your skin's getting ripped off. I know, as working in water, that's happened to me several times. Have you ever fallen down on concrete? That hurts.
That's why I don't skateboard.
It's so bad. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's where it started with me. Or even, like, I'm not going to go into it, getting bitten by dogs.
Yeah.
Angry dogs who are coming after you, beaten or by sticks. These things are immensely painful. And it's hard to ever, you know, say, oh, well, I'm just going to forgive them. So, like, think about that. These people who are peacefully, like, demonstrating, having all these things done to them and more, and they are standing up and loving their enemy. And the final word that I want to leave with, this is probably my favorite line so far of this entire book. And it's one that I hold on, you know, dear, and I try to. And King says on, you know, near the bottom of the page 59, so this morning as I look into your eyes and into all the eyes of my brothers in Alabama and all over America and all over the world, I say to you, and this is it, this is my favorite part, I love you. I would rather die than hate you. I would rather die than hate you.
Thank you. I really want to give you that last word. So everyone, check us out on YouTube, In the Cab with Dream Queen, and soon to be available on all podcast platforms. We're doing a slow release capsule. Iggy Mac's last two segments with me are up, and you can also find it on Spotify and RSS.com and some other places. Just type in the Cab with Dream Queen podcast, and it should come up. And if you want some more guidance, DreamQueen_3AM at Instagram, and tell us your Instagram.
Iggy Mac, ickymac.
That's right. Thank you, everyone. I love y'all.
Love you.
Love you.